It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. The Moody Blues asking the musical question. Question? This portion of the show is brought to you by Oreck. Locally owned and operated throughout the St. Louis area. The best place to go to get great vacuum cleaners and all sorts of home cleaning supplies. O-R-E-C-K spells Oreck. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here in the studio. And now Colin Jeffrey joins us, putting aside his role as news director of this broadcast operation and becoming his alter ego, Cape Not Included, showbiz boy. Hello, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. We have a couple of movies to get to today. Before we do that, I want to ask you about this HBO Sesame Street deal that was announced late yesterday afternoon, because I don't fully understand it other than the fact that the people who make Sesame Street were losing money for the last couple of years and wanted more money out of PBS, and PBS said, we don't have the budget for it, right?
Yeah, sort of. But the issue is when you look at the actual company here, this is where it gets kind of odd. Sesame Workshop owns a bunch of rights for licensing toys, mm-hmm. but they were not doing well on the broadcast side of things.
And I know that they never owned the Muppets.
Right.
Because that was Jim Henson's operation.
Exactly.
So all of the Kermit and Miss Piggy stuff and Big Bird even. Well, maybe Big Bird was part of the Sesame Street.
Big Bird was part of them. They had Elmo. They've got Bert and Ernie. But the biggest stars walked away. But it wasn't a great business model for them because PBS could never pay tons of money for their broadcast.
Okay.
And so they, I guess, had been shopping. This wasn't something that just came about randomly, which I thought was odd. They'd been looking for someone to partner with. And so they partnered with HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And HBO is getting a few things out of this. They will get the longest-running children's broadcast. It's now been around 45 years.
Which has been instrumental in the lives of every kid
every
since
kid
1969.
Yes. It's still great. I don't know if you ever watch. You probably don't have the occasion. Your daughter's in college. I can't imagine you guys get together and watch HBO.
No, it's been quite a few years.
I'll put it on occasionally, and it's still good. It gets something that all the other shows don't get, and that it's about how to be friends and share and count. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that takes place in that show.
Indisputably the greatest children's television show in history.
Yes, I actually had a friend who interned on it, and she said it's unbelievable to work at. She loved
it. Oh, I bet.
Yeah, she loved it.
Wouldn't it suck to find out that working at Sesame Street was bad?
It's a sweatshop.
that it's a sweatshop, and there are those slave drivers over there. You won't believe what they have me do every day.
Yeah.
If I see the letter D one more time...
They hang the Muppets up by chains when they're not working.
Oh, man. So Sesame Street will go from producing hour-long shows for PBS to 30-minute shows for HBO.
Okay.
Those will be available for streaming, on demand.
HBO Go, HBO Now.
Yes. And HBO will also gain access at some point here. I don't know if this is immediate or when. They will gain access to a backlog of Sesame Street shows. So you can go on there and watch older episodes of Sesame Street.
All right.
After a 9-month period is up, Sesame Street episodes can then be aired on PBS.
Okay.
So they're not taking it away from public broadcasting. They're just saying, we need to have this sort of exclusive window.
Oh, all right. So basically, Sesame Workshop, the parent company, has found a new revenue stream. And let's be honest, what kid in America is going to go, Mom, this is 9 months old, I can tell.
Right.
This is so dated.
Yes.
So all the reruns will still air every day.
I don't know exactly. They'll work out the exact specifics of what can be. And this is only a 5-year deal, so they're seeing how it will work.
And by the way, when you are Sesame Street viewer age, reruns are a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because you recognize the episode. I mean, this was the whole concept. Remember the TV show Blue's Clues?
Oh, yes.
Aired the same episode every day at the same time for an entire week.
I think they made two episodes of that in 10 years. It was just the same thing.
But when my daughter was young enough to watch that sort of stuff, she loved it every single day. And the same thing with Sesame Street. If she would see something that she recognized, oh, this is the one where Big Bird does this or Oscar the Grouch does that. You'll find this out with Archie as he gets older and starts watching. They love seeing that stuff.
Did you go to the Fox to see Blue's Clues live?
No, I did not.
Oh,
did
we did.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Pretty awesome. Magenta and Blue's Clues got together. It was pretty...
Tear to your eye?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's important to realize, in the meantime, PBS will continue to air them because this new episodes more than likely, because they will not start airing on HBO until late
fall. Channel 9 here in St. Louis is not losing Sesame Street.
No.
They will continue to air reruns from decades now.
Yeah.
Segment, you know, and they can always take segments from this piece and that piece and put them together and make in a new episode.
Yeah, I'm sure they could remix them. Why not?
Yeah. And so they will continue to have that. So I think some people might have freaked out if you have little kids and you're worried, my kid loves watching Sesame Street on Channel 9. We don't subscribe to HBO. We hate the fact that we're going to lose that show. You're not losing that show is what you're saying.
No, you're not losing it. It's just they're finding a way to make it more profitable for the company that makes them. To make certain they continue.
Yeah, and also to pay for the show to guarantee that it will be on the air, well, at least for 5 more years.
Yes.
So it sounds like a win-win.
I think it's good for everyone. I mean, I'm fine with it.
I mean, if you have a kid who grows up in a family that doesn't have cable or satellite, or even if they do, if they don't subscribe to HBO, it's not like they're losing Sesame Street.
No, I just don't want to see crossover episodes on HBO series like The Wire and Sesame Street, or Game of Thrones and Sesame Street.
Yeah.
If they can steer clear of that, I think.
You know what?
Fine.
I guarantee you Sesame Street has done a takeoff on most of those HBO shows through the years.
Yeah, and if you haven't watched it recently, the stars that they get on there, it's unbelievable. I think Louis C.K. was on Sesame Street.
I'm sure he was.
And Jimmy Fallon, I mean, they get...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been great to see who they get on there.
Mom, I can't believe they're having Jimmy Fallon on here. This show is 10 months old at least. Yeah. Why are you making me watch this crap?
Yep.
All right, now let's get to the movies for this week. Thank you for explaining that.
Of course.
What do you got on the movies?
Well, I went to see this week Straight Outta Compton.
Here's the only thing I know about Straight Outta Compton. It's a movie about the origins of NWA,
yep,
which is the rap group that stands for Neighbors with Aardvarks. And very, very popular with the kids.
Very popular. No, that's not what it stands for, but we'll let you look that up.
The only way I can say it on the radio.
Yes. Yes. So yes. This is a biopic. It tells how the story of how these five rappers got together and created NWA, the sort of the beginning of a new subgenre in rap. And sort of the influence that had on their lives, on society, and how they grew from this.
Okay.
The rest of their lives.
Now, I know one of the guys grew up to be one of the richest men in the world, thanks to Apple.
Yes.
Because wasn't Dr. Dre in NWA?
He was.
And was it last year or the year before, he and his partner Jimmy Iovine sold Beats to Apple for some number that included the word billion?
3.2 billion is the number you're looking for.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Yes.
That's numbers with attitude.
Yes. Yes, he did that. And this is NWA is Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube. Those are the main three. And we've got two additional. None of the rappers in this are Chance, the rapper. He's not involved in this group. MC Ren, DJ Yella. Those are the remainder.
All right.
So the story really, this is almost like three movies in one. Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube. Interesting note, Ice Cube is actually played by O'Shea Jackson Jr. Ice Cube's real name being O'Shea Jackson. This is his son.
Okay.
Corey Hawkins plays Dr. Dre, and Jason Mitchell plays Eazy-E. I would love to see him get a nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
Really? That good?
Yes. All three of those are very good, but I think he's probably the best.
Okay.
And you're probably not wrong picking any of them as very good.
All right. Were you familiar with any NWA music before you saw this movie?
Yes, and I think everyone probably is, even if they don't know it.
Okay, I don't know it.
One of their most popular, well, Straight Outta Compton, but one of their most popular songs, Chant of Some Protesters, but F the Police.
Okay.
So we'll leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes, everyone's familiar with it. You'd probably recognize, and you'd recognize some of the sounds from their later work, especially just because they've been everywhere.
All right, if you say so.
This starts out...
Why are you laughing?
I know, that's right.
We're going to look at this really
I don't have to be a fan of everything.
No, exactly.
There are certain genres that I'm not a particular fan of, and hip-hop is one of them. No, I have no problem with other people who like it. It's fine.
Not that there's
anything wrong with that.
This movie, we're going to look at it as a movie and ignore sort of all the implications of it opening right now and sort of undertones. And this movie is good. It is a very good biopic. It does a great job of showing how these three, especially, and I'm going to refer to it as three because that's really who we're talking about, the main three, how they just wanted to become sort of famous in their area. Their goal when they started making this music wasn't, we're going to become a worldwide sensation, we're going to create a movement and this thing that speaks to people in cities throughout America. That wasn't their goal, but that's what happened. And it adds this level of authenticity, how you feel, wow, you feel, you buy into their story, that they're just trying to express their rage and frustration with the status quo and how they feel disenfranchised or powerless in society. And they're going to create music that they think will speak to people around them. Well, it turns out much more becomes of that. You're rooting for guys who the film brushes on are all flawed. These guys have not necessarily gang affiliations in some case, but they came up in an area where violence was sort of part of the everyday dialect. That was something they had to be
drug
aware
dealing.
Of.
Yeah, gang activity.
Yes. But you're rooting for them. You're pulling for them. We know it's going to turn out all right for some of them because we know who they are now. And that's good. That really plays well. This movie starts off and the first 45 minutes are electric is the best way. You see this rise and you see the beginning of some dissension in the group because they eventually split off. And it goes all the way through that. Suge Knight is a character in this movie for a few scenes. And we all know Suge Knight because he's facing murder charges. He is the villain and he is scary. He's not on screen for a long time, but he's legitimately scary. And because he was very associated with the gang, the Bloods, and he's scary. Like, I just don't know how else to say it. He's a great heavy in this, but he's not on screen for me.
Not really just a movie character, though. From all the stories I've heard, that was and is
Suge Knight. Yes, he was in the car when Tupac got shot. Like, this is a guy
There was a story where he held a Vanilla Ice by his ankles over a high-story hotel balcony.
Why?
It was something about him.
Money,
using
drugs, women?
Any of the above.
Yeah.
He takes small slights and thinks they're horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good. Paul Giamatti plays their manager, and he's an important role in the group blowing up, but then also getting pulled apart. Paul Giamatti, I'd watch him act in anything.
Absolutely.
He's great in this again.
So that means he's been in two big musical biopics this year because he was also the psychologist of Brian Wilson in Love and Mercy earlier this year. It was great in that.
Yes, and he really does a good job of portraying this guy who, when it starts out, really hears this and thinks, this is something special. I need to find a place for you guys and promote you and get you in a studio. And he does a good job. But then he ends up being a character that pulls the group apart. And if you're not familiar with this story, I mean, I feel like I can't spoil or it's something that happened over 20 years ago, but the group ends up dissolving and moving their different ways. Ice Cube goes and creates his own record company. Eazy-E and Dr. Dre initially stay with the manager, get sort of pulled apart there. And it's good to see that they handle all of that with sort of the same grittiness feeling. The last chunk of the movie gets emotional because, again, Eazy-E hasn't been with us for 20 years now. And after you watch this movie, I highly encourage you to go back and find the transcript of his press conference when he announced that he had AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
He died just a short time after that. But to read it and to juxtapose that with sort of the 19-year-old that starts off this movie and someone who not much later is dying and sort of the step back he's able to take and look at his life with a wide scope. It starts to talk into sort of look at the empire building. It's really just, it's a good biopic. Viewing it as a movie.
Will anybody who does not like hip hop like this movie?
Yes. Yes. I'm not a huge hip hop fan at all, but this is a good movie. It's the same reason people who weren't huge Ray Charles fans saw Ray Charles or Johnny Cash fans loved Walk the Line.
How would it compare to Boys in the Hood?
This is much better.
Really? Yeah. Because that was a very, very good movie.
And I think this is a better movie.
Wow.
I really enjoyed this. Now we're going to look at what the movie misses. And it's important. This is not a documentary. As much as it may feel like it at times, it is not. This is fictionalized. So they are going to take parts of these people's lives that are less than savory, Dr. Dre's well-documented abuse of women, and they're going to gloss over it. They're going to make a few jokes in there that play on that. and don't acknowledge the severity of what's behind it. I don't like that. But looking at it as a movie, it's a good movie. There's flaws with any of these biopics. The Ray Charles, probably most riddled with them in recent memory, inaccuracies. But look at it as a movie. I think you will enjoy it. It's something that you're probably not overly familiar with unless you're familiar with the group. And for fans of Friday, the movie Friday, this is directed by the same guy, F. Gary Gray. And in Friday, you may be familiar with the phrase, "Bye, Felicia." That's just in there. If you know Friday, you know what that means. They give you an origin story of that phrase. It's a little misogynistic, a lot misogynistic, but you will definitely catch the wink in there. So, yeah, you're going to, it's got things for sort of everyone. It provides a primer on them. If you're not at all familiar, you might not be inclined to go see it, but give it a shot because it's a good movie.
Straight Out of Compton is the name of it. What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7.
Okay.
7.5, maybe 7. We'll all say right. 7 out of 10.
The other movie that's going to open this weekend is called The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is based on a TV show that aired for 4 years on NBC 50 years ago. Now, I'm sitting here in a room with three guys who never saw this TV show. I saw the show.
No, because I saw the TV show.
Oh, you did?
Yes. We're the same age.
I know we are, but I didn't think you'd ever seen this show.
Oh, no, I did.
So we were very young boys when this show aired. Do you remember it at all?
A little bit. And I remembered, I got into Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible, because that was on about the same time.
A couple years later, actually.
Okay. I got into Mission Impossible. I had a problem getting into Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
But I know my parents and grandparents watched it, too. So stuck watching it.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was a spy TV series. It came on just a couple of years after the premiere of the first Bond movie, Dr. No. When that took off, everybody in Hollywood said, oh, we got to be in the spy business. And the producers of this show came up with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. about a guy by the name of Napoleon Solo, played by Robert Vaughn, and his Russian counterpart, Ilya Kuryakin, who both worked for an organization that was kind of a super secret spy agency called U.N.C.L.E., the United Network Command for Law Enforcement. And they would be sent around the world by their boss, Alexander Waverly, played by Leo G. Carroll on the TV show. and they would occasionally come back to headquarters. Remember they had to put this little triangular number on their suits every time they walked in? And to get into headquarters, they went in through the back of a dry cleaning establishment.
Yeah.
And they communicated with headquarters with a pen that they carried with them that they would twist the top of it and say, open channel D. Yeah. And then they could communicate with each other or headquarters or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was very early on in the spy genre. It sounds silly now. 50 years ago, this was, you know,
cutting edge.
No, they did not play it up as campy at all. That came a couple of years later when Buck Henry and Mel Brooks created Get Smart and turned the spy genre on its ear for satire. But Man from U.N.C.L.E. was a solid drama. Now, interestingly, because I knew I was going to go to the screening of this, I just searched on my DVR to see if the Man from U.N.C.L.E. airs on any of the 1,000 channels I get on UVerse. And sure enough, there's a channel called MeTV.
Oh, yeah.
Which on Sunday nights airs old episodes of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I recently watched one of each, and boy, do they not hold up.
And if you don't have cable, MeTV is the substation of Channel 4. So that's like 4.2, I think.
Okay, for people who have digital TV or live at McGraw's house.
Yes.
It's
11.2.
Sorry.
All day long.
I apologize. So The Man from U.N.C.L.E., when I was a kid, was a cool TV show. Here were these spies who went all around the world and got involved in all sorts of things. There was even a spinoff of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. called The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. with Stephanie Powers playing April Dancer.
Oh, my goodness.
That was her secret agent name. So I remembered the show as being really cool.
Wouldn't it be The Girl from Ant?
It should be.
Yeah.
You're right. Their sister organization.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, having just watched one of the episodes from 1966, so boring, so nothing going on, so poorly done in terms of set design and construction. I mean, it was cheap, easy television, and the characters were not fleshed out at all. And Robert Vaughn may have been a good actor, but he wasn't exactly Mr. Personality. And David McCallum, who's now on one of the CSI shows, also wasn't exactly a great personality. These guys didn't leap off the screen. I'm sure they were meant to be super cool, not just in terms of what they did, but also in terms of their personalities, to not show much of their personalities and just let them get engaged in whatever the story of the week was. And that was exactly what it was. So now, 50 years later, we have this movie, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is directed by Guy Ritchie, who made the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. a few years ago and has made a couple of other action-oriented movies.
Oh, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch. I mean, super stylized director.
Very, very stylized. In this,
he was married to Madonna for a while.
Yes, he was. In this movie, Henry Cavill plays Napoleon Solo. You may have seen Henry Cavill in the most recent Superman movies. Two of them, right? Didn't he star?
No, the second one's coming out. Superman Returns was a different guy.
Okay.
He was in Man of Steel and is going to be in Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice.
Okay. Now I'm not looking forward to that because I did not like Henry Cavill in the first Superman movie he did because this guy has no spark whatsoever. Nothing comes out of this guy. It's almost as if light is trying to escape, but it's stuck in a black hole that is Henry Cavill and his personality. It just goes absolutely nowhere. And they've got Armie Hammer, who played the Winklevoss twins in The Social Network. They have him as Ilya Kuryakin, putting on the Russian accent and talking like this the whole time. And he's not very good at this whole accent, right? After a while, it just gets old. There's also a small role for Hugh Grant as Mr. Waverly. It's almost as if he's not in this. The only bright spot in this movie is an actress named Alicia Vikander, who was in another movie earlier this year that I did not like, called Ex Machina. She played the female robot that was built by this genius out in the woods who was essentially just making sex toys for himself. That's a whole other review that I did several months ago. She was very good in that, and she certainly is cute. And in this, she's also fine as what they call in the spy movies, the girl part. You know, every Bond movie has the girl part. The Bond girls. Well, this one does too. And she gets involved in this. It's not even worth telling you what the plot of this movie is. It involved the Cold War. It takes place in 1963. And right there, by the way, I think is one of the big mistakes that they make in this movie. We're in the year 2015. Nobody's thinking about the Cold War anymore. And I don't think anybody really wants to see movies about that time in the Cold War. Sure, we watched Mad Men, which took place in the 60s on TV.
And The Americans.
Okay. Which was in the 80s, but still, taking us back to that time is really just an excuse for Guy Ritchie to put people in good-looking clothes, good-looking people in good-looking clothes and good-looking cars, and take us back to a time when style was very, very different. Didn't need to do that. They could have easily modernized this and had these two male super-secret agents working together with this woman. And they also, I think he tried to go for humor in the script of this, because I'll just give you an example. At one point, Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin, they are rival secret agents. They're not working for U.N.C.L.E. yet. There is no U.N.C.L.E. in this movie. It's an origin story. And they are rivals trying to get the Alicia Vikander character, Gabby, out of East Berlin. Napoleon Solo is trying to get her out. Ilya Kuryakin is trying to capture her to keep her in behind the Iron Curtain. And that's how the whole thing is. At one point, that mission is over, and then they are told by their respective governments, you two now have to work together. Even though you were just fighting each other to the death moments ago, now you have to work together as a team, and you're going to work with her to go after the nuclear physicist with the bomb that'll kill the world. That's every spy movie ever. So at a certain point, the two male agents take this woman, Gabby, to a store where they have to buy some clothes for her. And the two of them are making supposedly witty fashion comments about everything she tries on. And it's supposed to be humorous. Boy, does it lie there. It goes nowhere. It should not be part of these characters. It has nothing to do with them. We don't know them well enough, and we certainly don't get anything out of these actors who are playing them. The action sequences don't grab you. They are all too predictable. This is nothing more than a bad ripoff of a bad Bond movie. And I'm sure they saw it as the beginning of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. franchise. I'll be very surprised if it does well enough this weekend for anybody in Hollywood to say, let's do another one of those. And I also think it may really hurt Henry Cavill's career going forward, because this guy, as far as I'm concerned, is 0-for-2 now and makes me not look forward to the Batman versus Superman movie, because he just doesn't offer anything on screen except he's handsome. That's it. And as I can tell you from my own life, that's not enough, ladies and gentlemen.
Can't get by on looks alone.
No, you cannot. 3 out of 10 for The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Rough.
Now, what's it going to do this weekend at the box office? Both of these movies, what do you think?
Well, Straight Outta Compton had a great preview night. It made almost $5 million, so let's say $45 million. Man from U.N.C.L.E., I'll be shocked if it eclipses 20.
And probably cost $100?
It was big. I can't remember what it is exactly, because I'm not worried. It's
not going to be a hit, is what you're saying.
No.
Okay,
no.
What's still the big box office draw?
Well, Straight Outta Compton will be that. Fantastic Four was atrocious. That was one of the largest box office flops. I was supposed to do between 40 and 50 million, and it didn't even eclipse 30. It was horrible.
Wow.
Mission Impossible's holding on. It had the number one spot 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
It's going to have a drop-off because, you know, people have seen it, but there's better movies out there than Man from U.N.C.L.E., let's put it that way.
Easily. By the way, if you want to see a super secret agent with really good action, I haven't seen Rogue Nation, the Mission Impossible movie, because I don't like Tom Cruise.
Which, yeah.
But from what you reviewed it and said about it, that would be the spy movie to go to.
Yes.
And not The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, I really liked that one.
All right. One other movie thing I want to mention. We both really liked Inside Out. It's the only movie I've ever given 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's the perfect movie. There's nothing wrong with it. They're already announcing that the DVD of Inside Out will be available in October. And if you buy that, you are going to get a special, what do you call it?
A short
feature called Riley's First Date. Riley is the girl who's the center of this. And it's Riley's First Date, where a boy who she meets at the hockey rink in the movie shows up at her front door, and her father answers the door, and we see the emotions inside his head reacting to this boy showing up to date his daughter. He goes upstairs, tells the mother. Now we see the emotions inside the mother's head, and then the mother tries to relate to Riley because there's this boy there to date their 12-year-old girl, and then we see the emotions inside Riley's head. Just the trailer for it. Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Oh, go online or go to YouTube or wherever.
Great.
Type in Riley's First Date. The trailer's only a minute. I was laughing out loud.
Wow.
I may have to buy the DVD to see that short.
Well, there you go.
Those Pixar people are so damn good.
And you speak of that, they at Disney 23 or whatever, it's the Disney thing when they get together and announce all their stuff. They unveiled posters for Cars 3, so that's coming. Incredibles 2, finally, which I really liked the first Incredibles, and Toy Story 4. And Toy Story 4, we now know, will be the studio's first romantic comedy of sorts. It's going to feature the love story between Bo Peep and Woody.
Whoa.
So it's going to be an interaction, it sounds like, more among the toys, with their interactions with humans perhaps taking a back seat to that. So we'll see how that turns out. But that's a fresh direction for a series or franchise that I know you are worried about them doing a fourth.
Yeah. Well, then again, I was worried about them doing a third, and that turned out to be...
I loved it.
Fantastic. Toy Story 3. All right, so recapping, Straight Outta Compton, 7 out of 10, and Man from U.N.C.L.E., 3 out of 10. Anything else I got to touch on?
I've got one other thing. Dr. Ben Carson, he's running for president.
Yes.
And in the debate, he said, I separated conjoined twins. Funny you should mention that. He actually has a cameo in a 2003 Farrelly Brothers movie, Stuck on You, in which Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear play conjoined twins.
Yes.
He plays the role of Doctor, who is going to separate those conjoined twins.
He's the doctor in that?
He's the doctor in that.
Oh,
makes a
wow.
cameo.
Wow. I love that movie.
This is why the internet is great. Who would have known that? Someone out there went back. Someone owns that DVD. That's what this proves.
Well, now that we know he's been an actor, we know he can't be president because we don't elect actors to high, powerful offices in this country.
I like that movie.
Okay.
Honey and the Bees.
All right, Colin, we'll see you in the newsroom in about 20 minutes. Colin Jeffrey, showbiz boy here every Friday on the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS.